So welcome to Bicom's Hadiyun podcast. I'm joined in Israel by Richard Pater and Caleb Ben-Dor, and we have a very special guest with us today to discuss the ongoing fallout of the nation-state law. We're very pleased to have Amir Fuchs from the Israel Democracy Institute. Amir is a legal expert, and he's been working in this field for a very long time, so he's probably one of the best people to be discussing this with. Amir, thank you so much for joining us. And one of the first things I wanted to talk about is what we think the Supreme Court potentially will now do. So we've seen a lot of media coverage about the origins of the nation state law, about, you know, what the opponents think, what the supporters think. But moving on to the next stage now, where we have a petition by the Druze community challenging the law. And we also, I think, have something from Meretz challenging it. What do you think is going to happen, and what will the Supreme Court will do with it? I think that's the really fascinating question.
Yeah, well, it's a big question, and I cannot be sure, but I'll try to estimate. You have to understand that because this is a basic law, this is an equivalent or a substitute for our constitution. And never in our history the Supreme Court strike down a basic law, because the whole foundation of striking down laws, which didn't happen too often, but whenever it happened, is because a regular law was contradicting a basic law. So now it's the first time, it's not the first time that someone petitioned against a basic law, but it might be the first time that the Supreme Court will seriously consider saying that a basic law is unconstitutional on the basis of the theory of the unconstitutional constitutional amendment. It's not, it didn't happen only in Israel, but in Israel it's very new, and it will be very, very dramatic if the Supreme Court will do so. The Supreme Court said in the past that it might do so in very, very extreme situation when a basic law is contradicting the most basic elements of the foundations of the system. My estimation is that I'm afraid that the Supreme Court will not strike down the basic law of nation state. Maybe just one paragraph, the paragraph 7 about the fact that Israel will nurture and development of Jewish settlement, because this is really a paragraph that almost gives a permit for giving extra rights for Jews on the issues of settlements. But also on this issue, because the interpretation of the Attorney General, who came to the committee in the Knesset and said that this will not allow any discrimination against any specific person, what I think that the outcome will be is that the Supreme Court will not strike down, not the law, and even not the specific paragraph, but the Supreme Court will interpret the law in a way that it is not contradiction our existing basic laws, such as the basic law of human dignity, which under the interpretation of the Supreme Court includes the right for equality. And therefore, I think that the Supreme Court will try as much as they can to narrow down the interpretation of the law for almost only a declaration.
Can I ask a question about the Arabic language clause? Because, I mean, a lot of people have also analyzed this, and it's one of the strangest pieces of legislation I think I've ever seen, where you have a declaratory statement which then says that statement has no impact on previous laws. Is there a possibility that if someone were to challenge that particular section about the Arabic language, that there is room there for the Supreme Court to make a decision which reaffirms the status of the Arabic language and kind of reaffirms that the status hasn't been affected by the law, if that makes sense?
Yes, I think that this is just exactly what the Supreme Court will do. The Supreme Court cannot say that it is a formal language like it has been until now, at least according to the court, although we didn't have it in a new law, it was only in a mandatory law, which was before the establishment of the state. But everybody acknowledged, and in some cases the Supreme Court said that Arab language is a formal language, and now it is clear in the basic law that it's no longer a formal language, but has a special status. But I'm pretty sure that any attempt, if there will be attempt, and the Arabs fear that there will be attempts to minimize their rights for using their language or to get services from the country in their language, I guess that the Supreme Court will, and it will be the obvious interpretation of paragraph 4, which deals with the language, that the Arabic language has a special status. Regulating the use of the Arabic instead will be by law, and the fact that the language will not, the status of the language will not change because of this specific basic law. So everything that was until now will stay in practical meaning. But we cannot disregard the deep meaning of this law, which really, really alienates and gives the Arab citizens the feeling that they are not in their home, and that they don't have full civic rights, and their citizenship is not a full citizenship, and this is the real problem of the law. All these practical implications we can argue about, but we can't argue with the fact that when you see this law is very much resembling preambles to constitutions. It's not just another basic law, it's the basic law that defines Israel. And when you look at the definition of the state, and the definition is that it is only a Jewish nation state, which I personally totally support, but I support that the fact that we are a Jewish state is not contradicting the fact that we also a democracy that gives full equality to all its citizens. This is what was written in our Declaration of Independence. And this deep meaning, this deep message, we cannot argue against it, and this is the real problem of the law.
That was the intent.
Right.
In terms of the timing, I think there's a lot of people thinking, you know, when's this all going to come to a head? And we've heard about these challenges to the Supreme Court. But I mean, you know, I would imagine the Supreme Court's in some kind of summer recess. It probably won't start hearing substantively these challenges for a while. What is the timing on that?
Nobody can really tell, but it could take years before the Supreme Court gives a verdict on such an important and essential law. It will take time, there will be a lot of deliberations, and the state will have a lot of time to give their answer to the petition, and after that there will be a lot of deliberations in the court, and then it could take a lot of time until they give the verdict. And maybe because they want to let the political the politicians time to amend the law themselves. And sometimes the Supreme Court tries not to interfere, and surely not to interfere with the basic law, which, as I said, is our constitution, our de facto constitution. I'm sure that they will at least give it a chance for the Knesset to amend itself what it did. So if you're asking if we will have a Supreme Court verdict in the next few months, I'm sure that we won't.
Right. On that question that you were just talking about, giving the government a chance to do an amendment, I mean, we've seen over the last week some very interesting political statements about the law. Naftali Bennett saying he wants to heal the wounds. We've had Kahlon acknowledging some elements about how the law was passed, and the Prime Minister meeting with the Druze community and sort of hinting that there might be some kind of fix to recognize the Druze community, although they seem to be saying they won't amend the actual law. What do you think they're looking at doing to try and bridge that gap? If they're not going to amend the actual law itself, what do you think they might come up with?
Well, first, I agree with you that at least it doesn't look reasonable, at least in the near future, that the law itself will be amended. Although there were some saying, as you said, by Kahlon, and he said we did it harshly, too fast, or something like that. Although, you know, the law is on the table of the Knesset in 2011, on this specific Knesset for almost 3 years. So everything there is purposefully, and everybody knew it, exactly what is written there and what is not written there. So I don't see it, they amend the law quickly or in the near future. There could be, there is a possibility that they will pass a regular law, not a basic law, which gives some kind of a recognition of the Druze as parts of the Israeli society or something like that, that will try to ease the tensions there, because this is a really, Achilles ankle or something like that of this law, because I saw a poll, and although there is clear a majority of Israelis that support the basic law, mainly I think that at least some of them, because they don't understand what's the problem. And when you read the header of the law, and when you read most of the paragraphs in the law, you really don't understand what's the problem. It looks like some of the parts of the Declaration of Independence, some of the paragraphs are just, they took regular laws like the flag and the anthem and the law of return and all that, that also me, I can totally support. So a lot of people don't understand the problems with this law. So there is clear majority that support the law. But when you ask, do you think that there's a problem about the Druze, you also see a clear majority that think that this is a problem. So maybe we will see a specific law that gives some kind of rights for the Druze, so to try to ease this tension, because the country really is divided on this specific issue. And of course, I think that this, although I totally understand and agree with the Druze demands, of course, I think that this is a really problematic notion of what are civil rights, because you don't get full citizenship. Although I totally understand the demands of the Druze, I think that the whole discourse about the fact that the real problem of this law is about the Druze is problematic, to say the least, because it sends the message that to get full civil rights in Israel, you have to serve in the army. And this is a total absurd of a notion of civil rights. You get full equality and civil rights because you are a citizen. And even if you think of what happens to people who don't come to the army, then we have to ask ourselves, why didn't we call? And why did we make it a legal obligation for the Arabs to join the army? Because we didn't. It's not that they are violating some kind of law. This is the decision of our government since the beginning of the country. I have a very famous saying of Menachem Begin from 1962. He said, "We decided not to enlist the Arabs. We cannot come with complaints to them that because they are not going to serve, then we won't give them full civil rights." So I think it is still very on the table. So although I support the issue of the Druze, and it is, of course, they rightly so feel that they are alienated with that, and it's unjust, I think that the issue should be about everyone who are not Jewish, and of course the Arabs, they also have to be recognized as full citizenship in Israel.
Yeah. So that's a really interesting point. I mean, we're almost out of time, but I mean, that's a really interesting point, which is that actually, if there is a very specific piece of legislation or declaration about the Druze community, or say about communities that serve in the armed forces, it won't actually solve the issue. It'll compound the issue. It'll make those particular communities feel perhaps better. It may not, but it may do. But it'll actually double down on the very issue that everyone is quite angry about, particularly within the Arab community. It'll actually compound it.
Right. It will only emphasize the fact that we're creating different classes of citizenship. And at least until now, I think most of the people who support the law said that this wasn't the purpose of the law. I don't agree with them. But all of them said, well, we're not trying to make two classes of citizenship. It's just about our nation-state rights. It doesn't mean anything about citizenship. And it doesn't change the fact that we have basic law, human dignity. It doesn't change anything. Most of them said, some of them said what I think is the truth, that the purpose is to change the balance of Israel as a Jewish and democratic. But if we will recognize rights for the Druze, then what does it say about the rights of others, non-Jewish communities?
Fascinating stuff. Amir, I think we'll leave it there, but we've covered so much ground. Thank you so much. And hopefully we can talk to you again when there are more developments in this. But for now, Amir Fuchs, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's pick up on the politics that we heard from Amir there about, you know, the legal issues. But what about the politics? Kalev, what's going on in terms of the dynamics of Israeli politics now the nation state law has been passed?
Yeah, I think there's a variety of issues that we've touched on already. So Amir was very much talking about the legalistic component. And Chaviv last week was talking a little bit about the background to it. But I think another angle is really the domestic background to all of this. And there have been several analysts writing over the last couple of days, especially when Netanyahu doubled down on his support for the nation state bill. So you had a number of ministers, Naftali Bennett and Moshe Kahlon, basically saying, "No, we're happy the bill passed, but there have been some issues with it." And Netanyahu came out and really doubled down on it. And a lot of analysts here are really talking about that there's an election context to this. The former chief whip, David Bitan, said he expected elections in February, March 2019. That's also something that we've discussed together on this podcast. But I think as more and more people talk about elections, I mean, there need to be elections by November regardless. But it very much then comes down. Yes, 2019.
And within that context, Kalev, Prime Minister Netanyahu, very clear, accusing the left of hypocrisy about any opposition to the nation state bill. So we've got to really see this, I suppose, as the beginning of election season, haven't we?
I think so. I mean, there's a very strong argument that a number of people have made that actually a nation state law really should be passed by a wide majority of the Knesset. And I think such a scenario was possible. Benny Begin, the son of Menachem Begin, had a very short potential basic law. It said something along the lines of Israel is the nation state of the Jewish people that will guarantee equal rights for all citizens according to the principles of the Declaration of Independence. A paragraph like that would probably have had the support of around 90 plus members of Knesset. But there is an argument here that actually the point was to create this argument that the right can then say about the left that they're not nationalistic enough, that they're not patriotic enough. And I think there is a strong argument to view the passage of the nation state bill in this election and political partisan context, in addition to the reasons that Chaviv spoke about and also what Amir was talking about earlier.
So if we take that to its logical conclusion, when would elections be called? What are the possibilities? So the Knesset is now on summer recess until October the 14th. What happens next? Richard, what do you think?
Yeah, the Knesset is on a long break, both the summer and then also for the Jewish festival period throughout September and early October, and they just come back at the middle of October. It's quite likely that the Knesset will then... there are two scenarios, I think. One, that it can go on for a month or two. There may be other issues that they want to finish. In previous weeks, we've discussed the issue of the ultra-Orthodox induction into the army, which also they want to pass legislation. They may find that this government is still the most comfortable dynamic of which to pass that piece of legislation. So they may go for that. And then afterwards, we may find after a month or two, they disperse and call for early elections. Or they could even jump the gun and go even earlier and disperse almost immediately after having been reconvened. Either way, you're looking at a potential election in the first quarter of 2019.
So let's remind ourselves as well that in the UK, the election season is very short. It's only a few weeks, but in Israel, it's normally what, 3 months, isn't it?
Yeah, once they from when they dissolve the Knesset, there's the 90-day period of which then an election will be set.
So returning in October and calling an election then, that's a mid-January election. If you push on through till November, that's a February. How many February elections have there been? We've had quite a lot in May in Israel. Have there been many February elections?
I'd have to check.
We had a March one in 2015, if I remember correctly. I think to me, what's interesting will be we've talked often about how none of the coalition partners particularly want elections, because I think all of them in some ways are likely to lose support. But the closer you get to November 2019, where there needs to be an election, I think the question then is, who will initiate it? Will it be a Likud-initiated election? Will it be one of the parties finding a reason to pull out? So I think that as we get closer, that will be something to look at.
And we talked also before about a manufactured crisis. So what could that manufactured crisis be on? Could that be on the surrogacy law? Could that be on the conscription bill or something else? What do we think?
There are no shortage of excuses, I think, that any one partner can use to bring down the government, and there is some kind of credibility, if you like, in being the one that lifts the pistol off the table and shoots the shot that brings it all down. Although traditionally Netanyahu has operated in a way that he will make sure that it's on his terms and suiting his agenda. I just wanted to reflect also on kind of a longer term factor in the context of this nation state bill, that there's often been criticism going back for a generation, 40 years since Menachem Begin led the Likud to power for the first time, that they were operating, that the Likud governments were always operating in a vacuum where, in their view, the kind of the left wing and the establishment still set the rules of the game. And that's the other context that this new law should be seen, that it was the one of the first pieces of legislation, not the first, but kind of the most perhaps symbolic of the basic laws of where the right were kind of imposing themselves on the very institutions of the state. And again, I think that plays into what Kalev was saying, that whereby they could have gone for a far more consensual model of this bill, but very much wanted it to be seen as the right wing imposing its will finally on one of these basic laws.
That's very interesting. Okay, gentlemen, on that note, I think we will leave it there. Thank you very much for listening. If you are listening to our podcast and you like what you're listening to, then please review us on iTunes, share on social media, and please join us again next week. Thank you very much, Richard and Cullen.